The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
I'm Richard Paul Evans, author of the best-selling Michael Vay series. For more than 6 years, readers from around the world have followed Michael Vay and his friends as they battled Dr. Hatch and the Elgin. Then, at the end of book six, Michael Vay was struck by lightning. Now everyone's asking, where's Michael? You're about to find out. Book 7, the last book of the Michael Vay series, is on sale now. Find out why Glenn Beck says Michael Vay is fantastic. Michael Vay, The Final Spark, on sale now. Pick up your copies today.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
The CEO of Cloudflare, which is, which controls a lot of who gets on the internet and who doesn't get on the internet. The CEO's name is Matthew Prince. And a few weeks ago, he made a decision by himself to begin to regulate the internet. Michael Monahan from Vice spoke to him.
I found the Daily Stormer repugnant. I am not shedding a tear that that content isn't online anymore. But one of my fellow employees came up to me the day that we took it offline and said, hey, is this the day the internet dies?
There was no due process. You woke up one morning and you said, this is bad and I'm going to do something about it.
The thing that was the tipping point for us was I woke up one day and opened Twitter, and there were a whole bunch of screenshots of some of the people behind the site saying Cloudflare actually supports us and the upper echelons of their leadership are white nationalists.
But that's easily dismissed though, isn't it?
You're absolutely right, but what it had become was such a distraction that we couldn't have the really important conversation about what role should Cloudflare be playing in regulating the internet. And so I am deeply concerned that I had the authority and the power to wake up one morning and say, you know what? I'm done. These guys, I'm sick of this. So they're off the internet.
That seems like a circus and kind of disturbing. Nobody should have that power. Michael Monahan from Vice joins us now. Michael, when you talked to him, I could see your frustration. I could see that I'm watching it and I'm thinking, because I'm thinking the same thing you are. Do you realize what you're even doing or saying? What were you left with?
Well, what I was left with was a few things. I mean, I don't like to ever use the phrase free speech fundamentalist, because I don't like to associate the word fundamentalism with free speech. But I am somebody who is a free speech absolutist. Matthew Prince, the Cloudflare, the CEO of Cloudflare, knew that going in. And I told him, look, I understand why you did it. You're a private company. You can do what you want. We lurch into this thing. I mean, you were just talking about, you know, the expansion of government power. You know, we lurch into this area when, you know, companies like Cloudflare and Twitter and Facebook accrue so much power and influence that people say, hey, you know, we really should regulate them like public utilities. You know, I don't want that at all. And I think that Matthew Prince should be able to do what he does. And in one clarification, by the way, Cloudflare doesn't host anything. Basically, what they do is they protect websites. They protect websites from denial of service attacks. And for listeners who don't know what that is essentially, you can hire people, you can do it yourself, to press a button and to flood a website with bad data and to keep it offline. So Cloudflare will protect you from that and essentially keep you online. So what Matthew Prince did when he removed that protection from the Daily Stormer is he said, you know, you guys can go offline at any minute, and so effectively what happened. But, you know, I really like Matthew. I think it's a fascinating thing that he did wake up and say, I do have too much power. Most people who have too much power don't say that. They relish it and they envy having that much power. So, you know, I liked the fact that he did that, but I don't buy, to be totally frank, when he says, you know, I just wanted to start a conversation. Okay, the conversation has started. I'm on Glenn Beck's radio show talking about it. You were on our program on HBO. Let them back on your network. No, that's not going to happen. And the Daily Stormer, and one must do the throat-clearing thing and say it is the most repugnant website of a series of repugnant fascist websites that harass people, troll people, et cetera. But, you know, they can't find a home online at that now. And you do get into some sticky territory, because when GoDaddy, the enormous company GoDaddy, said, you know, you're not going to be on our network, GoDaddy was actually not hosting them. They were essentially, they were a DNS provider. And basically what that means is when you type in Daily Stormer into your browser, the DNS provider translates that word into a series of numbers and directs you to it. So it's essentially not like, you know, we're not allowing the pedophile to buy a house in our neighborhood. It's actually taking them off the map and taking all the street signs down. But I have a certain amount of faith in the American people and people everywhere that if they see this stuff, they will be repulsed by it and they won't be convinced by it.
Only 37% of the American people can name their rights protected under the First Amendment. What gives you the feeling that, I don't know, when I see people, you know, I have faith the American people are going to stand up against this when they don't even know what the First Amendment protects?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't really have that much faith in them. I'm this is me willing it in.
Yes. Okay. All right.
And I want. Yes. I want it. You know, they don't. They might know freedom of assembly, but not freedom of petition. I mean, these are pretty specific things. But you know, I actually have.
No. 37% only 37% can name any of the rights.
Yes. Well, one of the things that you'll notice recently, and it kind of collapses my confidence in people and their kind of understanding of constitutional rights, is this idea that exists in Europe that does not exist in the United States, you know, of hate speech.
Yes.
We do have hate crimes, and there's a conflation of those things, which I think are also, in a way, problematic of prosecuting people for the things that are going through their heads when they commit crimes that are already on the statute books. But I routinely talk to people that say that, you know, hate speech, we can't have hate speech, which doesn't exist. And as you said, you know, in your intro, there is a reason that we have First Amendment protections, and most people don't understand this. And that is not to protect my speech.
Yes.
It is to protect the most loathsome speech that is out there. And when we grimace at hearing this stuff, it doesn't mean that, you know, we should take this away because it will influence other people and make them bad people. The entire purpose of the First Amendment is to protect the speech of repulsive, knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing psychopaths like those who run the Daily Stormer.
So, Michael, what is the answer here? Because we've come into a country that is now so fearful that I think that reason has shut down, and so people are not in a place where they can say, you know what? I mean, let's look. Let's take it from another angle. Everybody has an opinion. Very few people have a different perspective, that's important that we look at things with perspective. It feels too good to say the Nazis and Antifa should be shut down to the average person. How do you make the case?
Yeah. No, it feels great to say the Nazis should be shut down. I want them shut down, and I want them shut down in debate. I don't want them shut down by companies or by the government. And what I often hear is comparisons, as I just said, to European countries. And I'll give you one that is actually quite helpful. The Germans in the denazification process from sort of 1945 and up until, I would say, you know, the American occupation ended, was a helpful thing, and it was a good thing. And I understand the instinct to ban Nazi symbols, to ban Mein Kampf, to ban Nazi rhetoric, and to ban Nazi-affiliated parties. I mean, they've been trying to ban the NPD, which is a sort of, post-Nazi party for quite a long time. And they're pointed to as a success story because you cannot have the Daily Stormer on a network if you are Google in Germany. I mean, you have to take it off your search engine. After Charlottesville, which, you know, was what, a couple, 300, 400 idiots raging through Virginia and making a national and international spectacle, a similar Nazi march happened in Berlin that was larger. And every year, and the anniversary of the bombing of Dresden, and on Rudolf Hess's birthday, fascist Germans, take to the streets and they march. David Irving's books are banned in Germany. Holocaust denial is banned in Germany. Nazi symbols are banned in Germany. And the only copy that you can get of Mein Kampf in Germany is one that has been annotated recently by scholars. So you can't pick that up. You can get it on the internet, of course. This has not prevented hatred and fascism from laying down roots again in Germany. And you see this. And now they haven't been incredibly successful in the political process, but do they exist? They certainly do. And you know, I would say there are more Nazis. My guess, and I'm just going to say I'm a guess to sort of preface this, is that proportionally there are probably more Nazis in all the European countries that ban Nazi propaganda than there are in the United States.
So Matthew Prince was hiding behind, in some regard, hiding behind. I mean, he is a private individual in a private company, I think, do have the right to choose who they work with. So we're balancing a couple of rights here.
For sure.
However,
I don't want to have his rights. I don't want to regulate his rights in any way.
Correct. And I don't either. However, we're entering a time where Google and Facebook, in particular, they control so much that, you know, if Google gets up in the morning and says, hey, you know what, you're not going to be able to search for vice anymore. You know, depending on who's in power and what's popular, et cetera, et cetera. That's extraordinarily dangerous. How do you balance this? What is the answer? Have you come up with one?
Well, you know, one of the things, I once pitched a story, and the people at Google gave me a very quick and a very swift no, and I probably should have pitched it in a different way. But I noticed that essentially Google, around the time of the Innocence of Muslims controversy, was acting as essentially a parallel State Department. I mean, they were interfacing with foreign governments. They are talking about policy and about what stuff that their citizens can see. And that gave me, you know, this sort of free speech absolutist, a bit of a chill. And somebody also who doesn't want the government involved in this and saying what Google can and cannot do. I do not think they're a public utility. There are plenty of other options. I mean, if it's a case that there's a monopoly of one internet provider that is, you know, running the show in an entire city, that's problematic. But, you know, there's Yahoo, there's other search engines out there. But yeah, no, there isn't any easy answer to this other than to kick up a lot of, you know, dust when this happens. I mean, you notice that the ACLU, for instance, has been pilloried by so many people, I think primarily on the left, for saying that these guys that are, you know, marching in their jackboots and shaved heads through Charlottesville have the right to do that. I mean, I think the first battle is, you know, convincing people, as you said, about, you know, understanding constitutional rights, that people do have the right to these opinions, and we have a right to debate them, and we should debate them. I think the biggest problem right now is the fact that, you know, younger people today and people I talk to routinely don't believe that free speech should be an unfettered right. They believe it's something that should be qualified if it lurches into the territory, you know, of racism, sexism, homophobia, et cetera. That is my bigger concern, because I don't see it right now. I see, you know, Facebook, they're sort of regulating stuff in their own way, but I see a lot of people going away from Facebook. I don't think Facebook is going to be the biggest thing in 10 years, much in the way that, you know, Internet Explorer didn't have to be, you know, broken up by the European Union because it was going the way of the dodo. So I think the technology changes, and I think there's a lot of stuff out there where, you know, people can get this information. It's not really going anywhere, but I don't like the mindset. That's the thing that bugs me the most, is that we really have to get rid of this stuff. Because
Michael,
if it infects people's minds, then we're done.
Michael, thank you for your time.
Man, he's great. Michael Moynihan. He is the managing editor of Vice Magazine, and a better title, though, that he called himself Free Speech Absolutist. I love that.
Glenn Beck. The Blaze Radio Network.
I'm Richard Paul Evans, author of the best-selling Michael Vay series. For more than 6 years, readers from around the world have followed Michael Vay and his friends as they battled Dr. Hatch and the Elgin. Then, at the end of book six, Michael Vay was struck by lightning. Now everyone's asking, where's Michael? You're about to find out. Book seven, the last book of the Michael Vay series, is on sale now. Find out why Glenn Beck says Michael Vay is fantastic. Michael Vay, The Final Spark, on sale now. Pick up your copies today.